Welcome to the Monkey House. It's me here in the year 2024, and I'm about to be in Sydney and Brisbane. Sydney from the 8th to the 12th of May, Brisbane from the 16th to the 19th of May, doing my show Dryer Dryer at the respective comedy festivals in those cities. But I'm also, while I'm up there, I figured I had a couple of days to kill, so I'm doing a Who Knew It with Matt Stewart on Monday, the 13th of May at the Chippendale Hotel, and in Brisbane at Good Chat Comedy on the 14th of May. And you can get tickets for all of that. Now, go to mattstewartcomedy.com for the links. mattstewartcomedy.com. Now, on with the show.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This week's episode of Primates is brought to you by Barbarossa Beard Bars. It's an all-in-one soap that cares for and nourishes your beard and your body. It's natural and handmade in Australia, and if you go to barbarossa.com.au, linked in the description, and use the code PRIMATES, written in the description, you'll get 10% off. And that's 10% off an already very attractive price. You might even feel a little guilty taking an extra 10% off, but you shouldn't, because that helps them know that you came through me and that makes me look good. And this is my first ever sponsor, so I'd love you to get behind them. That's barbarossa.com.au. I'll tell you a little bit more about them later in the show. But for now, on with the show.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbroadcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates.
Welcome to Primates, the podcast where we go through primates and popular culture from Chimpan A all the way down to Chimpan Z. This week, I'm joined by two very special guests, podcast royalty, I'd say, host of the Don't You Know Who I Am podcast, Mr. Josh Earle.
Hi, Matt.
And the host of Sizzletown, Mr. Tony Martin.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Or afternoon.
Two of my favourite podcasts. It's a real honour to have you both in.
Thank you, Matthew.
Cheers.
Doing what I assume is one of your favourite podcasts.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It seems to me like a very limited scope for a podcast.
You would think that.
But apparently we're already into double figures here.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I didn't expect it to still be going. But here we are, and there's still so I haven't even done King Kong yet.
Oh, really?
More episodes than Primates than there is Fawlty Towers, and that's good.
I think that says quite a lot.
Yeah.
You've probably been asked this question, both being veterans of the comedy world, you've both been asked this question before. What is your favourite primate?
Well, I do like the orangutans at the zoo. If I go to the zoo, it's straight to the midday show by the orangutans. They're always turning on a performance, I find.
Hey, yeah, they are the stars of Melbourne Zoo. Very smart.
Are they?
Yeah, real close up, watch them just like they'll look at you in the eye and complete puzzles.
Really?
Yeah, sort of psyching you out.
Change the preferences on your email?
Yeah, exactly.
Great. Well, Josh, favourite primate?
Well, I think chimpanzees are really good. Chimpanzees, they've got some character to them.
Yeah, well, the,
but they're also very vicious.
Yeah,
is that right?
You shouldn't smile at them.
They'll rip your face off or something.
Yeah, you don't smile at a chimpanzee.
We weren't brought up to, you know, they were cuddly when we were growing up.
They were selling paint to me when I was growing up.
Were they?
Yeah, there was the Taubmans or one of them ones.
You didn't have the dog.
No, there was always chimps. Because I remember my uncle in his shed had like a whole bunch of posters of chimps in overalls selling paint or tools.
Right.
There was that and the Chico Roll Lady. They were all through his shed.
That's a Tasmanian thing, I think.
No, I don't think it was just...
I think that might be Bernie specific.
They just went, the Tassie market, we've got to get the primates in. I think it was,
I can remember. I just remember dogs.
Dogs, the big dogs white fluffy dogs.
Yeah, they'd sell paint.
And also, I don't know if this, paint would often come with a paint tin of jelly beans as well. That's how they would get you to buy paint. Wow. Get a big paint tin of jelly beans.
Okay, we've got to sell some paint. Yeah. Let's see. Monkeys and jelly beans. Yeah. That's the key.
You got your start in marketing, didn't you, Tony?
So yes.
They're the kind of tricks you employed?
I was, it was mainly audio. I was sort of writing a lot of radio ads, and obviously we had access to sound effects of monkeys. But it was, I'll tell you what it was. It was in the early 80s, and it was just at the beginning of cute Labrador pups being used to sell everything. And if you notice, that's still the case.
Yeah.
Toilet paper, it's always a yellow Labrador running through the house. That all came, roll of toilet paper.
Came from the 90s.
So were you working in radio?
The 80s, actually, sadly.
Were you working in radio when How Green Is My Cactus was huge?
Well, see, I was in New Zealand, so okay. we did not get cactus. Cactus, as yeah. it's always referred to. But I remember when we were working with the D-Generation, we never had enough running characters.
Yep.
And a guy would always come in and go, guys, you got to listen to some cactus. Get some cactus into you. That's the standard here.
Because it was always played when I was picked up from school by my dad on 7BU in Burnie. And it was always How Green Is My Cactus. And I was like 8 years old, had no idea what this was going on about. It was always Bob Hawke impressions.
That's
or,
right. I never... crazy. In the 80s, because I moved here in the mid-80s, so I didn't know who all the politicians were. And I would always tune into a satirical show and it would always be...
Yeah.
Just that was everyone's impression.
But that's what it was. So it was a satirical political radio show. I vaguely remember it as well.
It was like a serial. It was like 5 minutes
and
you'd slot it into your breakfast show.
I remember it finding it funny.
Right.
Or maybe I just assumed it was.
Yeah, it has the beats of comedy.
Yeah.
So you just go, oh, yeah, this must be funny.
I reckon my dad was laughing along, so I, you want to laugh along.
We never got that in New Zealand, but we did. I remember I was working at a radio station in the early 80s and we had the Rude albums by Doug Mulray, who was from Sydney Radio. And they were just, it was very blue, if I remember. I remember us going, how do they get away with this on radio?
And then he went to TV and got halfway through an episode before.
That's right. Well, I've talked about
Kerry
that.
Packer.
I think I possibly talk about this on every podcast. But yeah, Doug Mulray was the host of the Naughtiest Home Video Show, which was what it must have been was all of the ones that were too rude for funniest home videos. And someone had just been putting them aside. And then someone's gone, hey, we've got a whole hour here.
Yeah, it's the ones that would have been played at the Christmas party.
Yeah.
The home videos Christmas party going, oh, we'll put them on TV.
And there was a lot of, I don't know if there were monkeys in there, but there were a lot of animals.
Yeah.
And the story was that it was screening in all the different states and Kerry Packer called up and said, and his exact words were, get that fucking shit off the air now. And so it just got pulled and it got pulled in at different times in different states. So I remember on Get This, we would get people to call in and say, what was the last thing that happened in your state?
Yeah.
And in Melbourne, it was a child reaching for some kangaroo's genitals. And then it just went to black and there was an ad break. And then when we came back from the ads, Cheers was on.
Right.
Like possibly halfway through an episode. But in different states, there was someone pissing on a zebra.
My other favourite axing story, Tony Moclair told me this one, which is he was working on a show. It was all on the whiteboard. It hadn't been even in production yet. And someone from the head office came down, looked at the whiteboard and went, nah. And after lunch, they were told to pack up their desk. They got
really?
Just looking at the whiteboard. That was all it was. Just had what they had planned for the series. Went, nah, pull it. We're not doing it.
Wow. That's brutal. I'd love to see that whiteboard.
Yeah. The show we're talking about today, Josh, you picked it because I talked to you about this podcast before it started.
Yes.
You said it very quickly.
I said Lancelot.
Lancelot Link. Secret Chimp.
Yeah.
I said, what are you talking about? That sounds like gibberish. And you said, do you remember it from? Because it was.
I remember. So in Tasmania, Saturday mornings, there was a TV show called The Saturday Morning Fun Show. And it was hosted by the guy who read the sports on the nightly news and Howie the Yowie, which was this kind of grey blob of a thing with a big pink nose. And I don't know who did the voice of it. And they would play like cartoons and they'd come back and they'd do a little bit, it's this person's birthday and then that kind of stuff. And then so it was the goodies, banana splits, and then there was a third one which would change up. And I remember this being in the rotation somewhere.
Banana splits is another.
It's another one, yeah.
Another primate related kid show.
Well, this is another story from that, which has primate kind of influence. So, people used to send their photos in, the kids, for their birthdays. And there was a girl at my school who was 3 years younger than me, but her photo went in. And look, she looked a little bit Simeon herself. And so when they showed the photo, underneath they would do like the Hey Hey It's Saturday and have like comments underneath. And they just put Planet of the Apes.
Oh,
she was like
God.
Turning 8 years old and they just roasted her on TV.
Take that.
Yeah.
8 year old.
Like, on your birthday too.
You monkey looking 8 year old.
Yeah. That's for daring to send in a photo. I
so
guess.
Lancelot Link was on, and then a couple of years back, like probably 10 years ago, Acme here in Melbourne had a showing of it. And me and my good friend Justin Hazelwood went along to just reminisce in that nostalgia and then realise that this is the weirdest fucking show I've ever seen.
Yeah. Well, it feels like the 1960s, but according to the Wikipedia, it was 1970-71, a live-action film series featuring a cast of chimpanzees given apparent speaking roles by overdubbing with human voices. They're all wearing clothes.
Yep.
They're involved in a spy scenario. It was a lot of the people who'd made Get Smart worked on it,
yeah.
Apparently. So,
The two creators were writers for Get Smart, and they both quit their jobs as head writers for the Carol Burnett Show to do Lancelot.
They'd right. actually just won an Emmy the year before and left wow. that to work on this show.
So they had high hopes, and it was the most expensive kids show at the time. $1 million plus. Was the budget? Was yeah. that per episode? No.
No, for the season.
For the season.
Wow.
In 1971, that's probably $1 million per episode by today's money.
Yeah, sure.
I don't know finances.
Because you don't have to pay the actors in this show.
Right.
Pay the handlers.
Yeah, right.
But the actors aren't getting paid.
So so it's basically, yes, very similar to Get Smart. You got the agency to prevent evil is sort of the equivalent of
control
versus the criminal headquarters for the underworld's master plan, or chump.
Chump.
Are they like the chaos?
Yeah. So there's ape and chump.
Ape and chump.
Yeah. Yes.
And yeah, some of the actors were famous-ish, like the actor who played the bad guy, Baron von Butcher, was it voiced by Bernie Coppel.
Who was Siegfried.
That's right.
In Get Smart, and then later Doc on The Love Boat.
Yeah, that's a weird, what a change-up. Took off the mustache, became it was a sex symbol sort of, wasn't he, on The Love Boat?
Well, weren't they all? I can't remember. They were just always suavely swanning about in shorts.
Because his Baron von Butcher voice was basically his Siegfried
right.
voice.
Same
was just the, so it was very recognisable. I guess they just said, can you come in and do your Siegfried?
It says laborious staging and training of the animals. But this is the part that got me. To make the dialogue fit the chimp's lip action, the creators went to ridiculous lengths. Voiceovers were ad-libbed on the set.
Yeah.
So they'd be watching the mouths with a mic in hand and just talking along, trying to make it fit what the mouth of the chimp is doing. And it says, this led to beautifully absurd moments of the chimps breaking into songs at the end of sentences or spontaneously reciting Mother Goose rhymes just so that it would look right. So obviously you've got a sentence like you're going, okay, we've got to quickly blow up that island, but the monkey's mouth is still moving, so then they've just gone, three blind mice. They've just said anything to make it fit.
Rather than just cutting.
Just yeah. cutting to another angle, you would think, for your million-dollar show.
But obviously it was a different time back then. And I think we've found with this show most primate-related TV shows and movies happened before 9/11. And I don't know if it was because that was a more naive time.
Yeah, right.
We were more happy to play with chimps on screen. Maybe it was before we realized they could rip your face off.
After 9/11, a monkey in a suit defusing a bomb is no longer funny.
It seems to be the case. There's very few of those sort of scenarios happening anymore, on screen at least.
So is it cruelty? Would it be considered animal cruelty?
I think that's got to play into it a bit as well.
Yeah, there's a documentary on this called I Made Lancelot Link. It goes for 15 minutes. It's well worth a watch. It's with the two creators. Have you seen it, Matt?
Yes.
I didn't know how much research you did into it, so I thought you might have not watched it.
Oh, no, I've definitely watched it.
Well, they're talking about the shoes. So the chimps all have shoes on, but they don't have soles on those shoes. apart from the woman who plays the assistant, like right. that Jewish princess kind of
is
assistant.
Is that Mata yeah. Hari?
Yeah. Yes. Of course. I think so. And that chimp didn't mind wearing shoes, but all the others are just the casing of the shoe, but no sole on the shoe. And
the commitment, like, yeah. surely if they don't want to wear shoes, yeah. is your show ruined if they're going around Beth? People go, I can't also, believe this is a real spy.
So that one who wore the shoes, the Mata O'Hari, she also would, like, she was very temperamental on the set, and if she didn't want to do it, she'd just pull all her jewelry off and throw it in the bushes. And so a lot of
Is that worked into the story?
Yeah. No, but a lot of the techs had to go and find them in the bushes, and then they realize, oh, we just get copies of all the jewelry, and just if she chucks them, right. put the other ones on, and just keep filming. Now, all the other monkeys, though, so all the monkeys had trainers who taught them how to speak. So the trainers would be off the side just doing that. For the listener, I'm doing my hand opening and closing like I'm right. operating a puppet, except for the main one, which is Lancelot Link, who they just gave him gum. So he's just chewing gum the entire time.
Yeah, that's not as believable.
No.
Looks like he's chewing.
Wasn't it on Mr. Ed, the talking horse, they put peanut butter
yeah.
in the horse's mouth.
But that was black and white, so you can kind of get away with just smearing their mouth with, like, a condiment.
Oh, God. So that's frowned upon now.
Yeah.
I think Ross Noble told us on radio that there is some kind of law that you're not allowed to make a monkey do something that it would not naturally do.
Yeah. So riding a horse is another one. In the first episode, they're on skis. There's like, and they talk about this in the documentary where it was like 100-degree day and they had all the monkeys in like snow gear on skis sliding down this fake little mountain they've created. And also, this is the other thing. And I'll move on. All the male monkeys were castrated before the show. So you got cast and then you got castrated.
That's a very disturbing episode.
So because they were worried about the female monkeys going into heat and then they won't be able to actually film the show.
Yeah, I don't think you can do that anymore.
No, you can't do that. Yeah.
So actors. No Me Too issues in the monkey world.
But the main monkey, Tonga, who played Lancelot Link, secret chimp, they said he'll remember this because he was a bit older than the rest of them. And so the vet who was always on set, apparently one day was just on set, and this is like a few months into the filming, and Lancelot Link escaped from the set and jumped on him and bit a hole into his back.
Really?
And it was at this moment the TV executives who had not been on set at this point apparently rolled in their limousine, opened the door, and there's the star of the show biting a human. And apparently they got back in and just drove off again, and they didn't come back again. They just went, we don't want to know, just film it and we'll put it on air.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Yeah. This hasn't happened since Gilligan's Island. Goodness. But listen to this. The filmmakers made the most of the budget staging multiple episodes with the same settings and wardrobe, occasionally reusing the same chase footage,
yes.
including a Rolls Royce. Now, that was a big thing when I was a kid is a lot of shows would just use the same shots.
Yeah.
The Dukes of Hazzard was a classic one. That's like they filmed... They obviously filmed the car jumping over a ravine from about five different angles,
yeah.
and then they just rotated them. And Battlestar Galactica, the original, was another one where it was the first episode, you went, wow, this is as good as Star Wars. And then week two, that's just the same five shots over and over.
Well, this is amazing. So they had such a budget, they could afford a Rolls Royce for a chase scene.
Yeah,
where you look at Australian TV shows and you know there's always going to be a crash in one of those shows when the guys go, oh, my car's not working.
Yeah.
That's all right, take mine. And some bomb that's like cost them $500. Like Toady and Madeline West's character, Dee, in Neighbours, when they're on their wedding day, apparently they went to drive off and like, oh, we can't find the keys. Get in here and drive off. And then it drives off a cliff. Wow. You know that's going to happen. So, yeah.
Yes. That I remember that footage. Yeah, going out, it was like an XD Falcon or something from 1982.
Yeah.
Yeah, I won't take the Rolls.
Yeah.
I just need to use the Falcon. It's incredible hearing this because I remember I would have been 6 or 7 and we got a TV for the first time in New Zealand. There's only one channel at that point. So if Lancelot Link was on, you had to watch it and everyone in the country would be watching it. But having not seen proper spy shows or Get Smart, this is like I'm learning. This is total surrealism. Like, people are, like, bugging, you know, they've got tape recorders and, and guns hidden in their shoes and cars with machine guns that come out of the headlights. Yeah. But I'm seeing it all for the first time in a monkey universe. Very strange.
It's like, for me, it was, like, always The Simpsons. Like, I didn't know what they were parodying. So Cape Fear, I didn't know about that film until I saw The Simpsons kind of take over. And then when I watched Cape Fear, I went, oh, that's what that's why that was so clever.
The Planet of the Apes, the musical, was the first Planet of the Apes I've seen.
Wow. Wow. But we also had, I remember at the same time as this show was going to air, there was an ad campaign on TV for a tea, a brand of tea called PG Tips. And that was all with monkeys.
Yeah.
So they were all dressed up classy, like they were in a Merchant Ivory film. Right. And the same techniques, possibly even made by the same people, possibly even the same chimpanzees. So you'd be going from a monkey show to the ad break and there'd be a monkey ad. What is happening in New Zealand?
Yeah. The other one, if you've not seen this show, like, there's some great costumes and also, like, there's the character Wang Fu, which wears a fake moustache.
Wang Fu.
On a monkey's face, they've got a fake moustache. And apparently there's another one who has, like, a monocle. And in the document, they talk about he always had the monocle. It never fell out, and if it did fall out, the monkey would put it back in himself.
Wow.
I just loved wearing this monocle.
And what's strange about watching it is you go, okay, the monkeys probably don't understand what they're doing.
Yeah.
They don't understand why they're being made to wear these things and hold guns and everything. But then on top of that, you've got the layer of, like, having a violin case with a machine gun in it, which is a strange concept. I mean,
no wonder they ended up biting the guy's back.
You would bite someone's back. What is going on here? Why am I talking into a telephone?
I got to pull you up, Tony. You've been calling them monkeys.
I'm sorry.
They're apes. I mean, their whole organisation.
This is the podcast where you should get that right.
That's right. I have not done an episode where I haven't had to
pull someone up.
And it is, like, I think I grew up as well thinking chimps, like, if someone said draw a picture of a monkey, most people would have drawn a chimp, I reckon.
Yeah.
I think it, and in these shows, even in an article that was written recently about it, they refer to them as monkeys the whole way through.
Wow.
I don't know. Yeah, it's very disrespectful.
It's one
obviously.
Of those words, is it like midget, like that? You can't use that word.
Yeah.
And I'm using that word with quote marks around it. I'm not declaring anyone in this room or nearby to be one.
Okay.
And the only reason it's stuck in my head is I was listening to a Sly and the Family Stone album, and it's got that great song Stand. But there's a line in that song where it goes, there's a midget standing tall. In this incredibly right-on anthem, the word midget is used. By the way, if you want to beep all the midget, I've said it again, Matt. If you want to go back and beep them, there's going to be male.
It would make it an interesting game for the listeners to play.
Yeah. What's Tony saying?
What wrong thing is Tony saying today?
I apologise for all the midgets and monkeys that have occurred so far.
You've got a term that you use sometimes for stuff like, what was the character's name?
Tonga.
No, the bad guy.
There's
Wang Chung.
Wang Fu.
Wang Fu.
It's Wang Fu. And then there was Darwin. He was another character.
Darwin, he's the head. Each episode they'd say, what's your theory, Darwin?
Yeah.
It was a bit of fun.
Yep.
But the Wang, it's not Wang Chung, what is it?
Wang Fu.
Wang Fu. Does that count as a bit of Mino Raiki?
Well, it is a play on Kung Fu. And he is wearing one of those kind of like
Fu Manchu style mustache.
And I'm pretty sure the actor doing the voice is not a genuine Kung Fu master.
Is it doubly racist? So you've already taken a chimpanzee and you're forcing to do that. It's slightly offensive already. And then on top of that, you've grafted a racial stereotype.
Yes.
That's doubly problematic, isn't it, really?
So that means it cancels each other out. The two wrongs make
a right in that instant.
Because you joke around a bit on Sizzletown about there's a warning. This episode may be problematic.
Yeah. Well, because Sizzletown, if you haven't heard it, is a talkback show where I play the host and all of the callers. So in the last episode that went out when we're recording this, I had someone from the Podcast Diversity Council calling and go, why are there no women calling in? Or why are there no Indigenous voices on the show? And it's a very strange situation because firstly I'm arguing with myself. And then I can't on the show, in the world of the show, I can't reveal that I'm doing the characters. So I'm saying, well, I can't really, if I have Indigenous people call in, people will be offended. And then that character is going, how is that offensive? Really, that would offend people. So it's a very, like an Escher painting, really, yeah, of moral issues, of ethical issues. Because I have had, a lot of people don't realise I do all the voices, so therefore I do get a lot of people on Twitter going, why are there no women calling in? Why are there no trans callers? And I go, well, people might be offended. Why would they be offended by that? It's a very hard thing to explain.
There's speaking of things that are offensive now, but in the time, not as prevalent, but in the first episode, one of the characters is dressed up as a Native American,
right?
And then that in the actual shooting of it, that monkey escaped because they're outside on a lot, and that chimp. Sorry, I'm sorry for the chimp listeners. Escaped, and they couldn't find it.
Right.
And then an hour later, a hippie. This is in the words of the creators. A hippie came hand in hand with this chimp and said, I think you've lost this chimp. It was looking in my window at me for half an hour.
Oh, so,
which I imagine just being staring this stone dude just going, is that a chimp looking at me? What's going on? And then walking it back. Like, yeah.
Wow.
Dressed as a Native American.
Wait, okay. I was thinking that was in the show, but that...
That is out of the show. So that is like just on set, a chimp escaped. A hippie finds him, goes, I don't know what's going on, but let's go for a walk and see if we can find someone who you belong to.
Oh, man. He's taken his life into his own hands there.
Can you imagine leaving the Carol Burnett show where you've won an Emmy and going, I'm working with chimps and they're escaping and they're biting the vets?
Apparently the Emmy was won, and I don't know if I remember this, was won for a parody of Gone with the Wind.
Yeah.
Is that a famous sketch?
I don't know, but it was just... It's just one of those sketches that won an Emmy.
But had there been chimp shows before? Was this like an innovative show? Or?
I reckon there would have been chimps on, like, say, the Ed Sullivan show. And yes, just they'd put them on in that show. Because Ed Sullivan is a character, but it's Ed Simeon in the show.
That's right.
Yeah. And so I reckon they would have had it, and it's that thing of, oh, this is going to be great. People love seeing chimps on TV.
There was a movie, and I don't know if you've already covered this on this podcast, but Ronald Reagan.
I haven't yet. For Bozo?
Bedtime for Bonzo.
Bonzo.
And so this was former president. Well, it was an actor in the, 50s, and he's in a film with a chimpanzee co-starring. And you go... Think ahead 500 years when they're looking back at things that presidents – that's going to seem one of the oddest footnotes in history, really. We talk about Trump, how bizarre he is. But there was a president who did a movie with a chimpanzee.
It feels like the kind of thing that would – now you'd go, well, you're never going to work in politics. Like,
no,
how
exactly.
do you get – the political cartoonists, every cartoon exactly. would be hand in hand with a chimp.
Well, that's it. But do you remember when you guys would have been quite young, I'm assuming, when Bill Clinton appeared on television playing the saxophone?
Yeah.
That was insane at the time. That doesn't happen.
I also like that was a cool thing to do.
He's got sunglasses on.
Play the saxophone.
Yeah, I think the more modern version, that's probably Obama slow jamming the news on...
Yeah,
whatever show that was. Jimmy Fallon?
Jimmy Fallon.
Oh, my God.
Jimmy Flannel. He's fantastic.
He's a character in Lancelot Link somehow.
Probably.
Sorry, just butting in here briefly to tell you a little bit more about Barbarossa Beard Bars. It's an all-in-one soap that cares for and nourishes your beard and your body, and it's natural and handmade in Australia. You can get it in activated charcoal, you can get it in red clay, or you can get it in tea tree. That's right, all three of the three possible flavours of beard care, as far as I'm aware. Something that's really important, I think, to them and to us here, obviously, at Primates, is that it's 100% palm oil free. So it's friendly to our orangutan friends. I know other products basically are just scoops of palm oil that they tell you to rub into your beards, and supposedly that's good for your beard. I mean, even if it was good for your beard, how do you feel about that, scooping palm oil onto your face? May as well be the blood of an orangutan. Is that what you want? Orangutan blood on your hands? Well, you won't.
You won't have that blood on your hands if you use Barbarossa Beard Bars. Sorry, I've gone a little bit off script there. Barbarossa Beard Bars. Bloody hell, that's fun to say. Barbarossa Beard Bars. Try it at home. Barbarossa Beard Bars. It's coming up to Christmas, but these are the kind of presents you can give yourself anytime if you have a beard. If you don't have a beard, maybe consider getting a beard. But if you don't have a beard and you don't want to have a beard, I don't really get it, but fair enough. Maybe you have a beard in your life, maybe a significant other, maybe it's your son. Mom, if you're listening, your son has a beard. Maybe you could get me a Barbarossa Beard Bar for Christmas. But also, you should remember that beards are not just for Christmas, all right? Beards are for year-round. Don't just get a beard for Christmas and then, you know, chuck your beard out on the street come New Year's. All of a sudden, you've got a feral beard running around the streets, breeding with other feral beards. You know, that's not what it's about. At all, and certainly that is way off script. To be honest, there's not even a script. I've just had a couple of dot points here and I've said them all already. I love this company. They are my first sponsor on Primates, so it would be so cool if you could get behind them if you do have a beard in your life. If you go to barbarossa.com.au, you can use the code Primates for 10% off. Go to barbarossa.com.au, B-A-R-B-A-R-O-S-A. .com.au and use the code PRIMATES, all one word, spelled like this show's title, PRIMEMATES, for 10% off for some of that 100% palm oil free goodness for your beard. Now back to the show. So that, well, you mentioned Ed Simeon.
Yes.
So his segment on the show, he'd come in. It was a pretty good impersonation, as far as I know. I only know Ed Sullivan from The Simpsons, but
yeah, most people know Ed Sullivan from impressions of yeah. Ed Sullivan.
Yeah. Or they're introducing the Beatles, maybe? Was that
yeah,
him?
Yeah, that's right.
So he, I think it's each episode, he introduces a band called The Evolution Revolution.
Yeah.
And they play a song, and that song maybe has like a secret code for the other spy apes to get, but really it's just a chance for them to sort of, they were trying to follow on from the success apparently of The Archies.
Right.
So yeah. They were from The Archie Show. They had a hit, number one hit song called Sugar Sugar.
Sugar Sugar, yeah.
Which was big around the world. And so,
do you know who wrote that?
No, who wrote that?
Neil Diamond wrote Sugar Sugar.
Really?
Yeah.
That is a fun fact.
Yeah.
But apparently around that time, just every kid show would release an album. And they did collate that into an album released through ABC Dunhill. I believe it did not have any great success.
Really? Because right. The songs are great. Right. Going even back to the start of the show, the theme song is a great theme song to a show because it explains every single thing.
Yeah, of course.
It explains all the characters, what their role is in the show, and then it moves on. And I think shows should do that again. I think Lost has ruined it for everyone, where Lost just came in and just, that was it.
If Lost had a Gilligan's Island-style song at the beginning, that would be fantastic.
So on my radio show, when I used to do a sketch show called Lime Champions, we would sometimes do the theme songs and we'd add the actual lyrics of what the song's about. So for 6 Feet Under, we just had, people are dying, people are dying, we're going to bury them, and just we'd do a whole bunch of them. But which I think TV shows should do again.
That's a strong premise for it.
It's good. Well, when you're writing sketches every week, and you would know this, you've written many of them, but it's a thing of like, all right, if we get one that's a good format, like, here we go. These characters are coming on every single week.
I forget Lime Champions. I used to set my alarm for Lime Champions.
Oh, thanks.
It was great.
To turn the radio off.
Turn it off.
It was on at the very odd. It was like 7 o'clock on a Monday.
Yeah, 7 on a Monday. Something. We were pitching for years to midnight on a Wednesday or a Thursday or something like that, when the only people up are the people who are crazy enough to listen to it. But yeah.
It was quite a lot of work went into that show.
So
it was
much
very
work.
Impressive.
But you came on as Gary Sizzle.
Yeah. Well, I think that clip is on YouTube, but I think it's the most popular thing of mine on YouTube.
And I'm very happy because I don't say anything in that clip. Whereas I know Justin and Eva listened back to it and went, oh, I wish I didn't say anything. We should just let Tony speak the whole time. But the songs, going back to the songs, great songs. And this is one of the facts. So they had a single, Sha La Love You, which if you're listening to the podcast, open up another window, listen to this on YouTube. Don't turn this off, of course, and listen to it. It'll accompany it. But that was originally written for a band called The Grassroots, and then it was taken off them to give to some chimpanzees. Which I'm like, you must have gone, can we get a hit? I just want to hit someone.
I love
like,
the idea that they might have been halfway through recording it in the studio and then someone's just tapped on the glass. Sorry, guys. Sorry, we have to stop. You'll never guess what's happened.
We've sold it to some chimps.
But it's, how did that – because you mentioned – The Archies. Now, The Archies was a cartoon, so it's quite easy to make the characters be in a band. How were the chimpanzees made to perform music?
Well, they are quite convincing. The keyboardist looks really, and the drummer, I was surprised. Right. But they've got a trainer, Frank Inn, who's just like a master and also probably a bit of a weirdo, I assume. Right. But he got them to do things through the series, including ride motorbikes at one point. So he started with them on training wheels, eventually took the training wheels off, and then they were just riding motorbikes.
Really? Controlling the acceleration?
So, yeah.
Like these brakes? Days, you wouldn't even let the actor ride the motorbike. You'd get a stunt double in, but they were like, oh, I'll just put the monkeys on. Sorry, chimps.
Chimps.
But the other thing, like, so with the songs as well, they just gave the instruments to the actors, and it was just absolute chaos. They were just banging them. And then they said they played the music. And once the music played, they all, whatever instrument that looked like. So
really?
Chimps have a tendency to bang with the back of their hands. They don't bang with their fingertips. But then the person, the monkey, the chimp, who was on the keyboards actually was doing it like, and also doing it alternating hands, like you would actually play. It says here.
They
don't know how that happened. It was just a really lucky thing. And so you look at all the film clips. The chimps are doing the same movements because I've just used that one clip.
With different songs. Yeah. It says here some songs contained heavy guitar riffs reflecting the growth of hard rock. I like to think of monkey doing a windmill instead of doing a Pete Townsend. Wow. The Evolution Revolution was some – oh, listen to the – okay, we've got they're dressed in colourful hippie-style wigs and wardrobe. Lancelot Link on guitar, Marta Harry on tambourine, with Blackie as Banana's Marmoset on the drums. Sweetwater Gibbons, it's a play on words there, Gibbons in fringed vest and granny glasses was playing the Farfisa organ. There's a lot of organ talk. Yeah. Obviously, an organ expert has got onto the Wikipedia page for Lancelot Link. Oh, no, that's Vox Continental.
Well, you're not Wikipedia. What's your – you're famous for updating.
Well, I do a bit of work on IMDb, which was a project of mine that started in the 90s. When do you remember the internet starting?
It started when I was in high school, but there was like two websites you need to go to, and I wasn't interested.
So
I remember having an email when I first started uni, so 99, but going, well, I don't need it. And only in like 2002 was I like, I actually should. I might have to go on the internet now.
And do you remember in the early days when you went to one of those two websites, there'd be a counter which ticked over and go, you're the 67th person to visit CNN. But, they had the Internet Movie Database, which was started by a man called Col Needham. I don't know whether this is true or not, but I read he'd started it in the late 80s to catalogue his porno movies. So most things, I think, start with pornography.
Well, that when Josh said there's only two websites, the first website I ever saw was shown to me by friends at school, and it was shiteaters.com.
Oh, really?
And it was photos of naked people eating shit.
For 5 years, that's all there was on the internet.
Because I remember rotten.com. That was a big one where you could see like autopsy photos and all that kind of stuff. That was the only thing. I was like, I'm not into this.
That's right. And there was always the rumor was there's a picture of the corpse of Kurt Cobain. Yeah. That was the one I was always too frightened to click on. But in 1996, the IMDb had two New Zealand movies in it.
Yeah,
It was The Piano and Heavenly Creatures. So I just decided to make it my life's work to get every New Zealand movie, which at that time was about 490, into the IMDb. So I just did that for – it took me 3.5 years of just getting my mum to VHS movies in the middle of the night and post them over. And
you
I would,
going through Meet the Feebles.
That's right, Meet the Feebles. I remember putting that in there. So, and then after 3.5 years, the project was finished. And I was like, what am I going to do now? And then I started on getting old Australian comedies people had forgotten, like Brass Monkeys or Ugly Dave Gray's Celebrity Tattletales, and just putting them into the IMDb.
And they're two real things.
They're two real shows. Ugly Dave. Do you know who Ugly Dave Gray was? He was a comic.
Blankety Blanks.
Blankety Blanks.
Had the had the cigar as well. Because I remember there was the, oh, what's his name? Tim had the top hat Melbourne comic who used to do an impression of, this is my impression.
Oh, I'm Tim just too Harris. Hip,
baby. My wife, my wife. That's my impression of Ugly Dave Grainy. I remember watching that on an old ABC TV show called Something Hot Before Bed. This was before I'd moved to Melbourne to do comedy. It was like just a bunch of local comics, and that was one of the jokes. So I'm like, I know who Dave Grainy is, and I know who Ugly Dave Gray. I get this joke. Little 14-year-old me in Tassie getting it.
That's a good bit. Yeah. They're two of your mates, aren't they?
Yeah, well, Ugly Dave – well, Dave Grainy is a friend of mine, but Ugly Dave Gray, I have – he used to come on – radio show I did called Martin Malloy, and he was always pushing a joke book that he'd self-published, and it had that look of something that had been made on the work photocopier and stapled, and it had a sealed section in it of blue material. It'd always be on air going, don't for any kiddies listening, don't open the sealed section. But I remember one time the funniest thing he did on air, it was one of those things where he's a comedian who's who tells jokes.
Yeah.
But off air was really funny just speaking naturally. And you go, oh, he could be a really good modern comedian. He could do like a one-man show at the Fringe if he could just bring himself to talk on stage the way he talks off air. Because I remember one time we said, Dave, can you explain the difference to us between personality squares and celebrity squares? And his attempt to do that was one of the funniest things I've ever heard. But yeah, he was played by Angus Sampson in a movie in The King, that movie about Graham Kennedy. I remember Angus telling me he had to go and spend some time on the Gold Coast at the Ugly Dave Gray compound.
This is becoming a podcast of me asking you to tell me stuff. But
yeah, sorry.
I mean, that's kind of what podcasts are. But can I ask you to tell me something? I reckon maybe one of my favorite podcasts was called the Lonely Hearts Club.
Oh, well, that was a radio show. That was Angus Sampson's idea, and he wanted to do a fake relationship advice show hosted by four divorced men. And so he pitched it to the ABC.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
And they went, oh, great, we'll put it on Triple J. Remember there was Restoring the Balance,
yes,
where they're pretending to be young liberals. But the problem is that once it's on Triple J, you know it's a piss take.
Yeah.
So Angus was really adamant that we do it where that show would normally really be. So we did it on Radio National on Saturday nights from like 10 o'clock till midnight. And it was me, Angus, Sam Pang and Stephen Curry as these four divorced men who had all met at a healing sanctuary or something. And they're a bit depressed and they're all quite bitter about how their careers are going. I was what's called a second unit director in the film industry. So second unit director just does like cutaways.
Yeah.
I remember I was saying, if you're watching City Homicide and Shane Bourne turns and looks at a disused meatworks, I'm the one taking that photo, or a cup being put down on a coaster. I've done that shot. And he was really bitter that there was no category for second unit directors at the AFI Awards. But we never at any point used our real names. And we were all using our own voices. So, and Angus Sampson has a really distinctive voice. So we're going, surely there's going to be an article in the Green Guides. Oh, it's a piss take. Mm-hmm. And there never was. We were on for 3 months and there was never a word written about it. Really? And people would call in thinking it was a real relationship advice show. And we would get in experts. We'd get in like health experts and, motivational speakers. And we would just say to them, just act like it's a real show. And a lot of them didn't know who we were, so they just went along with it. And we'd do that thing of going for 10 minutes without any kind of joke. So it really fooled people into thinking it was a real show. And then Angus was so like there was never a second series because the ABC was so shat off that Angus wouldn't come out and say that it's a comedy. And they said, this is going to do great as a comedy podcast. And Angus goes, no, 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 it's got to be in health. So we were the number one health podcast for about 5 months on iTunes. But the ABC was so pissed off that we wouldn't just come out and say who we were that there was never a second series.
This is like when J.K. Rowling wrote under a different pseudonym and then like 6 months later when the book wasn't selling, yeah, she went, it's actually me, guys, and then everyone's buying the books now.
Yeah, they wanted us to come out at the end and go, it's just us, it's all good fun, and we just never did. We took it totally seriously.
I think I found it because someone tweeted it saying, well, I don't know why people keep mentioning me involved with this or something like that.
Oh, well, we would do things like, I actually had a situation where I would make up fake movies I was working on. And I remember I said, I'm currently working on Wog Boy 3, Kings of Mykonos 2. And that got reported on two websites as a real film in production.
How much of it was set out before you started?
It was all entirely improvised. If you had to work out a film like that, you'd write a few fake things you were working on. But the whole show was improvised so that it would sound really natural and spontaneous.
Yeah, so funny.
While we're talking about previous things that you've done, it kind of ties in with this show as well, Lancelot Link, because both The Olden Days and Barge Arse would have been a similar thing where you, like the voiceovers for Lancelot Link, they would have had to get the footage to, and then do it, but they were doing it live. Where you guys are trying to find the footage plus also write an hour's worth of TV a week. I don't know how you guys did this.
Well, because it was so complicated, we would actually do that months in advance. Yeah.
So the Late Show used to have two little bits. How long did each episode go for? Each episode was like
about 4 minutes.
Yeah.
And it was there was a show called Rush about the gold rush made in the 70s. And there was only about seven episodes still in existence. And we actually found a missing episode. It was like we got a commendation from the government because we found a master tape for a long lost episode. And then we would just, change the voices. But now on a laptop, you could do that quite quickly.
Yeah.
We were sitting there with two VHS machines, like dubbing bits across and trying to make the voices match. And I remember it was me, Santo Chilaro, and Mick Malloy, and we would meet every Monday, and the hours were 9 a.m. till 9 p.m.
Yeah.
So it was a 12-hour day. And sometimes we would come away with 7 seconds of footage. It was like doing animation. Yeah. If we ever got 15 seconds in a day, it was a triumph.
So was it on every week or was it?
It was on for Olden Days was on for 20 episodes.
Yeah.
And I think it took us 5 months to do that before the production of the show began. And then we started for year two, we were going to do it with a show called The Young Doctors. Do you remember that?
I know the name, but I don't remember the show.
Who was in it? Oh, Ada the kiosk lady. That's all I can remember. But we were going to do a show called Medical Hospital, and we worked on it for about a month, and then the people who owned the rights to Young Doctors changed their mind. We're like, oh, no. And so then we had to start all over again with a cop show called Bluey, which we became Barge Arse. And because we were so behind schedule, there were only 10 episodes of Barge Arse, and to make up the slack, that's when they quickly got that thing, Charlie the Wonder Dog, together.
Yeah.
So Charlie the Wonder Dog was entirely due to, I think, Grundy saying no, saying we reckon there's one more play in The Young Doctors, which there never was, by the way.
Did you think of using any of the Lancelot Link style tactics of just singing for a bar or two?
Of just getting some actors and putting peanut butter in them. I don't know. It was very, there was one. I remember with Olden Days, there's a joke where Governor Frontbottom that was the level of the humour. He's acting like a chicken. And so because his mouth movement is very chicken-like. Because we did this, I thought this was a really good idea. We never listened to the real voices.
Yeah.
Like we always did it with the sound out. It wasn't until we finished all of The Olden Days we finally turned the volume up and went, wow, that's what they were saying. Because it was better not to be influenced by what they were saying. And so Governor Frontbottom impersonates a chicken in one episode. And what I remember happening, and I can say this because she's passed away, Olivia Hammett, who was the only woman in Rush, halfway through us doing The Olden Days, changed her mind and said, this is really offensive. I don't want any shots of me to be used. And So, and she was the only woman in the series. Yeah. So she was in most scenes. So we had to do things like only use shots that she wasn't in. It was really hard to do. And I had written the episode with Front Bottom doing the chicken noise, and Michael Hirsch goes, "We're going to have to lose that episode." And I've gone, "Oh, but the chicken joke is so good." And I said, "Ask her how much money she wants to just use one more episode." And this woman, very principled woman, came back and said, $3,000. So I wrote a check for $3,000 of my own money so that we could have one more scene with her in it. So every time I see Front Bottom impersonating a chicken, I go, that is a $3,000 joke.
$3,000.
In 1992, quite. That would be like $4,000 now.
Yeah. Bloody hell. Did you ever work with any primates?
Never. Never. And I do listen to the Gilbert Gottfried podcast. And whenever he has a guest on, because they have a lot of old show business people. And in the old days, like, there would just be chimpanzees in every show. You know, like the Dick Van Dyke show, there would be the doorbell would ring and a chimpanzee would come in. And whenever someone mentions that, Gilbert, I notice is always, "Oh, they're very dangerous." He's obviously heard some nightmarish face ripped off stories.
Yeah, I think they're based on true stuff. Wow. I think they are real. And it's a certain age, apparently.
Right.
One of a semi-regular guest, Andy Matthews, is some sort of a scientist.
Yeah.
Right.
And he's told me that, yeah, they hit a certain age. Maybe it's, I reckon it's around the age that Lancelot Link was. I think he was about 14.
Well, going through puberty, just going, right, hormones are racing.
So that's when they're biting backs and ripping off faces. Not that I'm blaming the chimps.
No.
Because obviously we're putting them in shoes and on a horse. We can't expect them.
We've got them flying a biplane.
There's another scene where they're playing tennis as well. And they're actually hitting the ball, which is the other thing. And they're playing and then the phone rings and it's in the bottom of the racket and they pull the phone out and it's like he just talks on the phone.
That's cool.
Right. Here's an interesting detail. Listen to this. The show's first season episodes were an hour long. Good God. And also included Warner Brothers cartoon shorts from that animation studio's final years. The second season consisted of repeats from the first season with the cartoons removed. The original network broadcast also included a laugh track. This was later removed for syndicated and video releases.
Oh, so when The Office came out, they went, "We can't put laugh tracks on stuff. We don't need to force feed the audience. They know when the jokes are."
It's just much more disturbing. Probably with.
When MASH did that? MASH had, there was seasons with laugh tracks and then seasons without laugh tracks.
Oh, really?
Well, yeah. I remember specifically because when I was a kid, we would watch MASH and when it became really successful, Alan Alder, who was Hawkeye, was allowed to direct some episodes, and his episodes were always really serious and would have no laugh track. And there was one where, like, literally everyone got killed on MASH, and I think it was just a dream. They all died. There was no laugh track, and the credits rolled in silence at the end. And at our house, we were so furious. And I remember when MASH came on, if it said directed by Alan Alder, I just go, nah, switch it off. We didn't even watch it.
I reckon that must have been the episodes I first saw because I was surprised here it was a comedy, I remember.
Right.
At some point as a kid, it was like, just the music made me feel sad.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, it's called Suicide is Painless.
And it was it was quite a satirical film.
Yeah.
It was like a film set in the Korean War, made by Robert Altman, but he was clearly commenting on Vietnam, which I don't think anyone was doing Vietnam movies at that point. And it was quite, the surgery scenes were really realistic and disturbing, but then it was contrasted by the sort of hijinks that they were clearly doing to get through this nightmarish situation they were in. So that's a movie.
Yeah.
But now, a couple of years later, it's a lovable sitcom.
Yeah.
But they've still got the really gory surgery scenes. Very odd.
The last episode, which was the highest rated TV show ever, like, and one of the scenes is like there's like Korean guards come in, they're going to kill anyone who makes a noise. And so this mother like suffocates her baby.
What?
And the baby dies. And it's this whole conversation for the good of the people. Like, I had to do for the greater good. And that was the final episode where, you know, Seinfeld, oh, we'll just bring back all the characters. We'll have a nice time. And then it's like, no, they're going to kill a baby for the greater good. And that was the big message for the most highest rating show of all time.
How have I never heard that? That is wild.
Yeah. Now, they don't show it. When they show the reruns, they don't show the last one.
I feel silly sitting here talking about chimps in suits all of a sudden.
Chimps doing surgery. Yeah. That would be a disturbing show.
I reckon there'd almost definitely be an episode of MASH with some sort of chimp or monkey.
Surely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Family Matters had a chimp in it for a while. Steve Urkel was knocking about with a chimp. Because I remember he said the Latin name, Pongo Pygmaeus. Right. When I was in like grade 4 or 5, I knew that because I watched Family Matters and Pongo Pygmaeus, that's a Latin word for chimpanzee or orangutan, I can't remember now, but yeah.
It does feel like that's some sort of a jumping the shark scenario, bringing the chimp.
Yeah.
But Lancelot Link started there. They started over the shark already, I guess.
It would be great if they did a very serious episode of Lancelot, like a special episode.
Where a baby gets suffocated. Yeah. Okay. But there was also another show when I was a kid was called BJ and the Bear.
Oh, yeah.
It was about a truck driver who was accompanied by, was it an orangutan?
Yeah.
Based on the Clint Eastwood? Was it a TV version of Every Which Way But Loose?
But it looked like, you know, Highway to Heaven, those kinds of shows, but it was like there's this monkey knocking about. Like, because I remember it used to be on Taz TV at about 3 o'clock. You'd get home from school and you'd see the last half hour of it and then the kids' shows would start. But it was always BJ and the Bear.
BJ and the Bear, it's a great name.
Yeah.
Sounds like a talkback, like a commercial radio team.
Morning team.
It was BJ and the Bear.
Just the guy with an orangutan on. On No for Breakfast. That'd be great.
Wasn't that the person choosing the music?
That's right.
On Triple M.
On Triple M. That's right. But that, I think that was actually Mick Molloy's idea for a joke because we might have, you know, often just, we were always slagging the music. And he said, I think a fucking monkey's choosing. And then suddenly that was a campaign. But then when we did get this, it was a few years later. And I remember we would often refer to that. And a guy, the door would open, a guy going, don't mention the monkey, all right? We've put the monkey behind us.
I love those people. Like, I don't know if Husey talks about this, which is like when they were doing what it, I think was Nova, the ads for it, and he was in a wheelie bin on a tram tracks and the tram behind him. He's like, go round, because right. Trams can't go around. They're on the tracks. But they did the same ad in Brisbane with their team, and it was just a bus, and they were like, go round. I'm like, well, you can go around. You've missed the entire joke.
Oh, it's just successful because it's a catchy phrase. Go round. That's fun.
I'm sorry, Matt. I'm very aware that Josh and I have now said the monkey word about 25 more times since you told us not to.
Well, it's I mean, in this case, we didn't know. Maybe the bear is a monkey. We're not sure.
It's true.
So that could
be unconfirmed.
Yeah.
Yep. We normally rate the show with obviously with an amount of bananas,
of course,
out of a full bunch. I don't know how big the bunch is, but and then you can also let us know how ripe the banana is. Joshua, I mean, rate it as a child. Through your childlike eyes.
I'm going to give it as a child four very ripe bananas out of 5.
Yeah.
Do you want me to do my adult rating now?
Sure.
I'm going to give it 5 just for the sheer scope, just to go on set and go, right, we've got to film all this, get them in the costumes, get the trainers on board, then go and voice it, and then the soundtrack is also really good as well. It's 5 monkeys, 5 bananas out of 5.
It's wild that, because the budget is huge, but they still had to, you're saying they were scrimping in certain stages as well because they'd spent, it was so expensive just to film chimps. Yes. So there's another movie franchise we've been going through, MVP Most Valuable Primate, where it's a chimp who plays hockey, ice hockey.
Wow.
Hang on, sorry. This is not another podcast. This is
another episode of this podcast.
You had another podcast, which is
obviously
just talking about
one of my many primate related. No, another, it's a series we've been going through on this podcast, but in that, it's the movies go for 1.5 hours, but probably 30 minutes of it is the chimp getting dressed or undressed.
Yes.
And I think it's they're so happy with the fact that they've got this footage. They're like, we got to use it all.
Yes.
So just each item of clothing, one by one. There'll be little jump cuts, but basically you're just watching 5 minutes of a chimp getting out of bed and dressing itself.
And is the music, is it like the Shaft theme, something
really
cool?
Yeah, that's right. Beautiful. And I think it was pretty similar in the first episode of Lancelot Link. They did a lot of work with just a lot of the basics. Every part of getting on the horse was shown. Nothing was wasted.
There's a scene where the horse actually bucks and the monkey stays, or the chimp stays on. Sorry, I keep saying monkey.
They are. Well, I think they're very. Well, I mean, we find that out in most vertical primate that they got low centers of gravity and also make great skateboarders. So
there's another scene where one of the chimps gives another chimp a massage, and the chimp lays down on the table and gets a massage, really? And then tickles its feet, and it's kind of slapping the table, saying, "Don't do it." It's very good.
Honestly, the work of Frank Inn should be. Go unnoticed.
Don't watch it if you're from Peter, but everyone else, it's really good.
I don't think it could be made anymore. Apparently, the man Frank Inn also worked on the Beverly Hillbillies. I don't know who he was training on that.
Jed.
Jethro.
And Petticoat Junction, which I'm not sure what that is.
Petticoat Junction, yeah.
What's
Petticoat
that?
Petticoat Junction. It's like, it was a train station. People would come in. There was young ladies. They'd be friends with the people, and it was like...
So the whole show was set in a train station?
I think so, yeah.
I like that. There was a different era. Wasn't there? I think it was a show that I saw because you tweeted about it, where it was an Australian show set in a mall. Was that you?
Oh, yeah, no? Yeah. That was called Arcade.
Okay.
And it was so depressing. But at the time, I think it was the most expensive set that had ever been built. And then you look at it, you go, they could have just gone to Doncaster Shopping Town. But it's got a terrible theme song. Yeah. Baby, you and I, we're just walking through an arcade.
So the other Australian TV show...
couldn't be more literal.
The other Australian TV show, I can't remember the name of it, but what it was Every Day on SBS, and it was just in a train carriage. And about what was happening in that day in the news and just people talking about it. And it was really good.
And I think
it would have been super cheap to make.
Who are well-known now were in that.
Yeah.
I can't think of who. I don't think it was a chimp, though.
No chimps.
A topical chimp.
Could have, yeah. I'm looking for a future episode topics, so if you do think of any, let me know.
Well, you've got to do the Clint Eastwood, Every Which Way But Loose and Any Which Way You Can.
We just did on my other podcast, Dugan, we just did some live shows in the UK, and a listener of this podcast gave me the box set. On DVD, so I'm definitely going to get onto that sometime soon.
And it's worth investigating if there is a link between BJ and the Bear. And the thing about BJ and the Bear, I might be remembering this wrong, but I think the ratings were failing. So in the third series, they decided to have not one, but something like 9 sexy lady truck drivers.
Yeah,
it's just like someone's gone, we'll just have a female. Well, what about if there were 9 of them? I'm hoping I didn't dream that.
I feel like they auditioned 9 and I can't. Why not all of you?
But the orangutan's being sidelined.
Yeah. BJ and the Bear also sounds like a gay search term as well.
Jesus.
Yeah, be very careful typing that into Google.
At the truck stop.
That's the gritty reboot.
How many bananas would you be giving
Lance? I agree with Josh. It was an amazing show when I was a kid, but it was not like top shelf. It wasn't as good as Dastardly and Muttley in their flying machines, or Here Come the Double Deckers, which was an English show about a gang of kids who had a secret hideout in a junkyard. That was amazing.
That sounds amazing.
So it would be like second tier. So I couldn't give it 5 bananas. I'll give it 4.
Well, bananas, that's a great score.
Oh, thank you.
The Double Deckers, that sounds like, do you remember?
Here comes the Hot Stepper. Here comes the Hot Stepper. Word.
That's what I was thinking. There was an Australian show that I watched as a kid. I couldn't tell you the name of it, but it was the same thing, and it was the best. It was kids who were living in a secret, some sort of secret getaway, and there was like a bad guy called Spider.
Wow, and
this is something that no one's going to remember. I'm guessing
you're not thinking of My Secret Valley, are you?
Yes, My Secret Valley.
Oh. My Secret Valley. Yeah, My Secret Valley.
And the theme song is just they've just gone. Okay, is it Waltzing Matilda?
Yeah.
Is out of copyright. So it's just My Secret Valley.
Well, it's not, and Men at Work will tell you that it's not out of copyright.
Okay, don't mention that.
Oh no, that wasn't that one.
Right. Different was classic else. Australian tune. I think I'll have to. I mean. From obviously an animal rights standpoint, I'd give it a low banana score. But entertainment,
do you give every movie though a low from animal rights?
Well, not the cartoon ones.
Oh, okay, that's enough.
I don't know. I think this one has felt the most in your face. Those animals aren't probably having the best time, just because it's nonstop.
And then you learnt they all got castrated as well before they got...
That's definitely lost a couple of bananas for me, as they did too. But that brings us to everyone's favourite segment on the show, which is the Primate Sporting Mascot segment. And I didn't think I had one, but I just found an email from regular listener Nesta from California. And he said, this isn't really a primate mascot, but he thinks it still counts. He found a chimp in Brazil that ran for mayor and nearly won.
What happened? Was there a scandal? Was he...
I haven't, to be honest, haven't even read the Wikipedia page, but the fact that it has one is wild to me. The monkey is called Macacao Tiao, or Tiao the monkey, born in 1963, sadly passed in 1996 in Rio de Janeiro. It's called Tiao the monkey and it was a chimpanzee. I mean, I can't get away from this.
So you've now joined us.
I've done it myself. It's got his weight and his height, but it doesn't say why he did not... it says, okay, he became a celebrity when in 1988 a magazine called Caseta Popular jokingly created his extra official candidature for mayor as a protest in defense of null voting. At the time, voting was written on papers instead of registered using voting machines. It is estimated that more than 400,000 ballots were cast for him, and he reached third place in an election with 12 candidates. That's got him in the Guinness World Records book. I've said that in a weird way. As the most voted chimpanzee in the world.
Okay.
Which is obviously, that was probably a blank page for quite a while.
Wow. What was his platform? What was he running on?
It's got to be, I could only assume it was, I won't rip your face off. Yeah. I think it's a long bow to call that a sporting mascot, but I do appreciate that anyway, Nesta. And the other favourite segment everyone loves on this show is Circus Watch. The last month or so, we've been trying to get Andy Circus on the show. Through nothing more than me mentioning him at the end of this podcast. Right. And I'm sure if he's obviously maybe doesn't listen through beyond the sporting mascot segment, maybe that's where he's like, that's all I need. But if you are listening, Andy, please come on the show. That'd be really good. I've given facts about him in the past. Like he's publicly said he has sex with his wife 4 or 5 times a day.
A day?
A day, yes.
Does he do it in a motion capture costume though?
There are definitely, balls all over, I guess. Sure. But yeah, he's portrayed two of the greatest apes on film,
sure.
King Kong and Caesar,
yes.
Who is probably my favourite of all the on-screen apes. So hopefully one day he will come on the show. He's just released a show on Netflix called Mowgli.
Right.
Is that how you say it?
How does he have time if he's having sex with his wife 4 or 5 times a day?
It's a punishing schedule.
No sleep. He works overnight, comes home and bones all day. But... someone suggested this a while ago that I should just get all the listeners to tweet at him. I don't know. How would you feel about that? Is that something that you should encourage?
It's a compliment. You're not tweeting abuse at him. You're just suggesting he come on a popular simian-themed podcast.
That's true. Okay. How long are you wanting him for? Like,
5 minutes.
5 minutes at the most, yeah.
Exactly. You could just phone it in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, Andy.
You'd phone it in like you phoned in the Ian during the Blockheads movie. You phone...
What is he?
Have you seen that?
No.
It's actually quite good. I just thought, what movie did
there, no, there was a whole movie about Rhythm Stick?
Yeah.
But the problem is, why didn't he just play him? Why did he have to motion? Why did he green screen it? Just to green screen everything.
Well, yeah, and that's the movie that's just come out, which is about a new version of The Jungle Book. I don't know if you've seen pictures, but the big problem he came up against was bears and stuff don't have... As emotional faces as a chimpanzee or a human. So they're kind of like this, almost like humanish bears. So they look kind of cool, but maybe nightmarish. I don't know. A bit of both.
Getting into that sort of terrifying Polar Express,
yeah.
dead-eyed sort of world.
The Uncanny Valley. Mm. And finally we...
Uncanny Valley. Uncanny Valley.
Some of our listeners, our patrons, you can support the show on Patreon at patreon.com/dogoonpod. You support this show as well as Do Go On and Book Cheat, Dave Warnicki's podcast. And one of the rewards is you get to have your favourite primates read out by me.
All right.
Which is obviously quite an honour.
Prestigious.
We've got He's a frequent messenger to the show, Detective Herbert Covington. I'm not sure in what organization he is a detective, but I believe he's a very good one. And he says, if we're talking fictional primates, and sure, we can be, he reckons it's Bubbles from Dragon Ball Z or Dragon Ball Z. He's the most powerful regular, he's put in brackets, right, fictional monkey in Dragon Ball, and probably most powerful in all pop culture, being able to withstand 10 times the Earth's normal gravity, making him more fast and strong than any Earth monkey. Plus, he's adorable. So, okay, ticking true. All the boxes.
And wasn't Michael Jackson's monkey called Bubbles?
That's true.
Right. So is that a tribute to that or just a coincidence?
It's gonna you got any history with Dragon Ball Z?
No, my kids are into Pokemon, but not Dragon Ball Z.
I think it was the 90s. I think maybe it was just after my...
I think it's still going.
Oh, okay,
I think
great.
You can still get the cards, yeah.
But there's a few... someone else mentioned Goku, who I believe is another sort of ape. So there's a lot of apes in that. So future episodes ready to go.
Well, I think in the original Ghostbusters, the cartoon, there was
a too.
Ape in that as well.
Xavier Michaelides is keen to talk about that one. Yeah, so there was... we'll talk about that in that episode. But yeah, there was copyright issues. They already own the rights to the term Ghostbusters.
Oh, did they?
So then the Ghostbusters movie wanted to make a cartoon. Oh, no, they did make a cartoon, but they had to call it The Real Ghostbusters. And then the original one, sort of piggybacking off the success of the movie, made a cartoon as well.
Yeah.
And that was just confusing for kids.
Slimer was the main character as well.
Right.
Or in the movie, he's not on their team, but in the cartoon, he's on their team.
Of course.
Real confused. So I can't wait to delve into all of that.
And in the cartoon, they don't have the scene where Dan Aykroyd gets sucked off in the library either.
Is that a scene?
That's a scene. I remember as a kid. Like, this is a is it's kind of a kid's movie.
Or is
it's alluded to that
there's
one strange, a ghost is sucking him off.
Yeah, that's right. There's a sort of, is it a dream sequence?
No, it's a real thing where he's just...
His belt is being undone. I've forgotten that. That is a really strange bit in Ghostbusters.
Yeah.
And he does like a cross-eyed
They didn't
response.
Do that in the remake with the women.
They didn't do that. Well, I think that's why old school fans were furious. If you're going to do it properly. Also, listener Ilka Ilomaki says their favourite primate is Cheetah from the 90s TV version of Tarzan,
right,
mainly because of childhood nostalgia, and they wouldn't dare to watch it now. Mm. I reckon they could dare.
I dare you to.
Didn't someone write a fake autobiography by Cheetah about 5 or 10 years ago? And I might be getting this wrong, but it was like nominated for the Booker Prize or something. It was like it was awards worthy. It's called something like I, Cheetah. And someone's done it in the style of a classic Hollywood autobiography that like Mickey Rooney would write about himself or something like that. And it's obviously a work of fiction, but I'm pretty sure it was like shortlisted or maybe longlisted for the Booker Prize.
I'm getting more and more homework from this episode.
I imagine, Matt, that you must occasionally wake up and think, it's a limited idea. Am I going to get to 50? But I reckon this can go to 100.
Yeah, it feels... I was thinking like a year or... What? Now I'm just not sure. I mean, I still haven't done any King Kong. And there's
seems
there's
odd.
5 or 6 of them.
There are. Yeah, so, there's King Kong versus Godzilla. You've got some of the cheaper versions
that's
to
right.
get to.
I mean,
although around episode 80, where if you're doing yoga ads, I'm like, no, you've just, yeah. just shut it down. Just shut it down.
You've got to go through all the original Planet of the Apes movies. It was 5 of those. You could do an episode each on
that's
on those.
Haven't touched on any of them yet. I've only done one of the reboots.
Right.
So we haven't got an old episode on Bubbles, Michael Jackson's.
That's the terrible Tim Burton, Planet of the Apes. People forget that
with,
one.
With Abraham Lincoln, The Big Finish.
That's right.
Yeah, so I'm in this for the long term, I think. Travis Alexander, he has suggested his favorite is Max the crime-fighting gorilla from South Africa, who apparently is a real, this sounds like it deserves its own episode, a real flesh-and-blood gorilla, saying he literally took a bite out of crime and a criminal's butt and survived being shot by that criminal. So,
but where is his work showcased? Is there a Dog the Bounty Hunter-style series that follows him around?
There's got to be, right? I feel like there's got to be something, at least a book written in first person sort of.
If Steven Seagal can pass himself off as a real crime fighter, surely.
Because I know this is can. This is a monkey, but there is a monkey in San Diego called Josh Earl. What? Who's got a best really? Friend called Pucho the dog. It was like Animal Planet cute couples kind of thing. And so in my podcast, I have to Google my name at the start for the intros. And that came up in the first week. And so it's a little monkey that wears a nappy. That's, yeah, so that's do an episode about him.
You've got to come back.
Come on.
So there is a like a reality show about it.
Well, was it one episode of like a National Geographic
that's
show?
Very yeah. doable. I much prefer one episode yeah. if possible. And finally, Rachel Johnson says her favourite primate is the orangutans. Got that in common with you, Tony. Mm. In particular, the character, the librarian from the Discworld novels. Apparently, he goes apeshit when anyone calls him a monkey.
Oh, right. Well, don't listen to this one.
I guess it would be quite easy for an orangutan to go apeshit.
They've got it in them for sure. That's another one I'd love to do a one about, but I've got to read a whole book then. Yeah. I've read a couple of those Discworld novels, well, but not for a while.
Get Dave to do it as a book cheat and then you just be on that episode.
Oh, that's good. Crossover. Yeah. Love that crossover potential. Well, that brings us to the end of the episode. Thanks so much for joining us. Where can people find you?
Josh, where?
My podcast, Don't You Know Who I Am, which is out every Thursday, and you've both been guests on that, so thank you very much. And also I've got a new podcast coming out next year with Jess McGuire called 100% Pod Volume Hits. No, wow. 100% Hits Volume Pod, sorry.
Okay.
And we go through all the 100% Hits volume albums, goes from 0 or 1 to 22, and we just talk about the songs, and it's, you know, if it's a good dose of nostalgia there. It goes back to 92 when it started, and then we go all the way up to 99 when they ended it.
You were showing me the first edition, and that's got Roxette as well as...
Roxette, Paula Abdul, who else is on there? Like, there is actually some good songs, like Crowded House are on there with Chocolate Cake, so not their good song, but they've got, like, yeah, some good stuff on there as well.
And
yeah.
The other podcast, Don't You Know Who I Am,
yes.
For people who don't know it, it's a sort of a game show, but it's basically show. Just
it's an interview show where I all the questions are about the guests, and so they reveal stories that they haven't revealed elsewhere, and it's kind of fun, and it's just a good excuse for people to tell their best stories.
And you do seasons of live shows every sort of semi-frequently.
Yeah, so next year I'm planning to do it monthly, month on month off live shows.
So, of course, you're also appearing at the San Diego Zoo.
Yes, in a nappy with my friend Pucho.
Antonio, obviously Sizzletown, which is your... Is it the first ever phone-in podcast?
I'm saying that it is, and I keep waiting to just open my Twitter and have someone tell me otherwise, but there doesn't seem to be many live-to-air talkback podcasts. But I think when this episode of Primates goes out, we will be in hiatus, but we're back in the first week of February.
And it's a very Moorish podcast. It's only half-hour episodes.
Only half an hour, which... and it's so much work. it's an insane amount of editing. But I mean, I don't think people even realise that I'm talking to myself for the whole half hour. So,
which is, I think that makes it way more fun.
Yes. It's easy to get guests.
I know, I've got to book four every week.
I know, I always see Carl Chandler.
Yeah.
And he's always exhausted from the effort of trying to get people to come on the Dum Dum Club.
Plus, also, he runs three comedy rooms
That's
a week
true.
As well.
That's very true.
You also, you're playing in a band of one of my musical heroes from TISM, Humphrey B. Flaubert's.
Yes, Damien Cowell has a band called Damien Cowell's Disco Machine, and it features seven actual musicians and then me sort of flailing about much like Bez in the Happy Mondays. But but Damien is just slowly luring me into doing more actual singing. So we in the current show, we do a duet of White Christmas, but it's about Pauline Hanson.
Oh, that's so good.
Yeah, so that's a lot of fun.
Are there any shows coming up?
We are supporting Regurgitator somewhere in Melbourne on the 22nd of December. So
awesome Christmas show. Because you got a few Christmas tunes.
We do, yeah. And there's a new album coming out hopefully next year, which is, I think, Damien's best one yet. He's got an amazing back catalogue. If you go to his Bandcamp page, he's actually done more albums. I didn't realise this, but TISM only did six albums. They did about 25 EPs, but they only had six albums. I think Damien's now done maybe 8 or 9 since TISM.
Also, and you can see their last ever show all up on YouTube, TISMs, and the best scene is when Mark O'Toole, comedy writer, gets pelted with dollar coins at the end of it. It's a very good scene.
Well, I actually got pelted by dollar coins at a TISM gig in, I think, 1989, and I still have a piece missing really? From one of my teeth.
So that
from
was being just a thing they did.
Hit. I can't remember why, but I think the dollar coin had only just been introduced. Oh. And they go, they're like bullets.
Yeah,
yeah, they're heavy
people
coins.
Are chucking coins.
The one with Mark O'Toole when he was playing Proust or something.
Yeah.
Oh, is that the telethon?
The telethon, yeah.
Called Save Autism.
They were a dollar short.
They had to raise $1 million.
That is a really great show. Yeah. It's on, if you get their last album, which was called The White Album, and was only available in a giant box that had DVDs and everything.
I remember going to JB Hi-Fi. It must have been delayed for the release. I visited a JB Hi-Fi weekly for, I reckon it was a month or
right,
so.
Right, right.
And is it in yet?
It's irregularly sized, so it doesn't fit in the normal.
Yeah, that's right.
It looks like a VHS.
Yeah.
Like Damien told me, they just made so many insane commercial decisions with that album. But it is a great album.
Yeah.
And it has...
It's one of my favourites. It had a hit in Germany.
Yes. Everybody else has had more... Everyone else has had more sex than me. And it also has a song on it, Somebody Start a Fight or something, which Paul Prevenza uses as the theme for his
The Green Room
show.
Well, if you're going down that rabbit hole on YouTube, also watch their appearance on Hey Hey It's Saturday of Saturday Night Palsy, just to see Daryl Summers say, and you can clearly see him not having read it before, and go, their song, Saturday Night Palsy. It's great.
Great.
And the setup for that clip is that they're all wearing masks, and they had all their costumes from previous tours, and they had groups of people wearing all the different costumes, and the studio just got flooded one on top of the other of all these groups. Right. So it ended up being 30-odd people in there, I think, which I didn't figure out for a while that it wasn't an effect. It was actually just full of people. But I really loved the first two albums of the Disco Machine as well.
Yeah.
So, looking forward to hearing the new one. For people who want to find Primates on social media, we're at Primates Pod on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Email is primatespod@gmail.com if you've got any suggestions for future topics or any sporting mascots or any sort of mayoral candidates or anything like that. If you could please give us a 5-star review, this is something. You don't lower yourself to this sort of stuff, Tony. You don't either, do you, Josh?
I should, but I don't. I always forget to.
But
I was told that you got to ask, otherwise people don't do it. And I'd really appreciate it. Put a 5-star review in on iTunes or whatever, and apparently that makes the podcast more visible due to algorithms.
Right.
And I don't. What you can give me your honest message in the notes. Just give me a 5-star review so that the algorithms help, and then you can tell me what you really think in the comments. And that brings us to the end of the show, but we always finish the show with our classic catchphrase, which is just riffed at the end. So it's a primate-related thing. I don't know if any of you want to put your... Tony, if you want to do the honours. Josh, thanks so much for joining us this week. And Tony, as we always say on Primates Podcast...
Where's your monkey?
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbroadcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates.
I mean, if you want. It's up to you.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.